This is a UUMC Syracuse production. Conversations with Pastor Alicia.
Hi, I'm Pastor Alicia Wood at University United Methodist Church. Today I am interviewing Trish Johnson. Just a little background as to why and how. Why is because at University Church we believe that God loves all people and therefore we are called to love all people. So in that, we partner with a lot of different groups, including folks who empower or embrace or are a part of the healing of LGBTQ people. And so we actually have an ACR Health luncheon here twice a month. ACR Health puts that on, and we just open the space up. And it is free for anyone who has a health condition, which that's pretty much everybody in some way, shape, or form. CNY Pride actually meets in our building once a month in planning their festival and parade in June. And what else? World AIDS Day has been hosted at University Church, I believe, 8 times, and we're very, very proud of that. And a CNY HIV AIDS Network also has their meetings in our space as well. So this is just a few examples of ways in which we interact with the community, the LGBTQ community, beyond worship. And of course, there are ways in worship as well. But today, Trish Johnson comes from another community that we are looking forward to partnering with even more, SAGE. And I would love, Trish, welcome.
Thank you.
For you to tell us a little bit more what SAGE stands for, or if there's a longer name of it.
Well, SAGE USA is the original down in New York City. And from that, there are around 29 affiliates throughout the country. And SAGE Upstate for us has been around since 1997. And we've progressively grown. And in the early 2000s, we hired an executive director, Kim Dill, and she's been with us ever since. And we, over the years, have been from one building to the next, and now we're down on East Fayette Street.
So, lovely.
In the CNY Philanthropy Building.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Lovely.
So we're close by. We're neighbors.
Yes, we are. We're really close by.
And we just opened. We just reopened yesterday, a couple days a week.
Oh, wow. Okay, great.
So that's
open to the community.
Open to the community. We've been opening. We've been doing Zoom meetings, but we're looking forward to actually seeing people's faces.
Right.
Again.
That's awesome.
Or at least partial faces.
Yeah, right. Half of their face. So do you want to tell me anything more about SAGE now, or do you want me to ask you later?
Well, I can tell you a little bit more about it now. It's something that I've really been looking at over the years since I came out as an older adult, because SAGE is a great place to work with older LGBTQ community because they face isolation. Their sense of community, maybe their experiences coming out later in life took them away from their biological family, and now their family are the members of SAGE. So we work with different programming. We have fall prevention, knitting, writers group, socials, a trans social, SAGE vets, and I hope I'm not missing any. But we have all these different events that are right now are on Zoom that we're hoping to come back live. But we also have second Sunday at SAGE. It used to be a potluck. Maybe someday it'll be a potluck. I have a meeting also once a month. But my purpose at SAGE specifically is I'm a neighborhood advisor through the Office of Aging. And I am here for those who need help getting assistance through, whether it be HEAP or SNAP or transportation, any issue. I want people to know that I'm available.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
What does SAGE stand for? Is it an acronym or not?
Oh.
It's okay if it's not.
No, I always look at it. I was told something last week, and it was different than what I thought. Because when I looked at SAGE, I was thinking it was more like serving aging gay elders. That's how I looked at it, you know.
But, yeah, right.
I wouldn't put that. But it's something else. But it's something to that degree.
Okay.
Okay.
I believe you.
Yes.
Thank you. So you just briefly, quickly said that you came out as an older adult, I think are your words. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yes.
Would you be willing to share with us just about your coming out and what made you ready when you finally did come out and what made you so brave at that time?
I think the bravery has been over the last 14 years, actually. I grew up in a very traditional household. I think right now, if you were to look at the year 2022, my five siblings, the average length of marriage is, 40 years. My parents married for almost 50 before my dad passed. I knew my place in the world and what I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. We weren't as global in the 80s and 90s as we are now. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of knew what my path was to be. And I dated and nothing ever stuck. One funny story that I have is my mom used to say, "What name of the disciples haven't I dated?"
That's great.
Yeah. Isn't that
was
great?
It Martha?
Wow, that's a good one. I like that. And so really, that just happened. That was just a part of my life. And then in 1998, I went to seminary and I was a different bird anyway because I wanted to go as an order of deacons. And that was pretty new within the 1996 discipline. So people really didn't know what to do with me. But I met incredible, amazing people at Drew. That's where I went. I went to Drew Theological School, who were coming out, wanting to be in the ministry and coming out. And I was that friend. I don't know why. I was that friend that they would come to. And I don't think I really even questioned my sexuality or who I was at that time either, because I still had the notion that I was going to get married and have children and things were going to happen. And that's exactly what happened. I graduated from seminary, got married. Actually, I got married, then graduated mm-hmm. from seminary and have two now young adult sons.
So married a man.
Married a man.
Had two sons. How old were you when you got married?
When I got married, I was 34.
Okay.
So I was already considered older at that time anyway. People were already wondering, oh, you're 34 and you're not married. And it's like, no, I'm not. Or, actually 33, I was married.
Okay.
But anyhow, that happened. Mm-hmm. And ministry was great. I had the opportunity to have my own retreat center, which was called Bounties Crossing. It was a startup of mine because when I would travel to Drew my last year, I was considering either working with older adults. That was where my ministry was as a deacon, working with older adults or hunger. And going down Route 26 to 81 down, to Drew, mm-hmm. I saw a lot of the need, the rural need. Mm-hmm. And I am a child of a farm family. Mm-hmm. So I grew up on a farm. So I kind of, I never understood because I always thought we had. Mm-hmm. We didn't live life thinking that we didn't have. It just, mm-hmm. So my father and my brothers had a farm that there was a house available. So I was like, asked my father, can I use this as a retreat center? And yes, it happened. My district superintendent, Carl Johnson, helped me get a grant from the General Board of Global Ministries for 3 years.
Wow.
And it was considered an actual, yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's impressive.
Exactly. And Bishop Fisher came and visited it, and I was officially appointed there.
Wow.
And so, wow, what an incredible feeling of just the beauty of being able to be present for people to come and use it as a day retreat, overnight, work in the gardens, just have it be. But really, the emphasis was advocating for the small family farmer and the rural poor. But then I was like, well, maybe I should, serve a local church to see what it's like. And I had been commissioned a deacon in 2005 with a wonderful class. And Craig French at the time was one of my mentors for that class, along mm-hmm. with Rebecca Dolch. So the two of them were wonderful mentors for our class. And so because I wanted to serve in a local church, I had to take away my deacon's privileges and become a licensed local pastor.
Oh.
So I served three different appointments, and my last appointment was at Canastota, and we grew. Mm. And I think it was January of 2008, I knew that I was, like, at this place where I knew life, it was good. Everything was good. And my husband came to me and told me that for his job, we had to move to Minnesota. Mm. So a lot happened. Because, again, I grew up in a traditional home where you would follow your husband. And I was loving what I was doing. It was everything that I had hoped to have, a retreat center and serving a church at the same time, a part-time church. Oh, it was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. And at the same time as I was realizing that I couldn't go to Minnesota, I was realizing that there was a lot more that was going on in our marriage than I had really allowed myself to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. And by the end of June, we had sold our house. We didn't move. I was no longer able to be appointed. Mm. And basically the retreat center went away.
Wow.
So I went from everything being where I thought God planned, you know, well, God has me wherever God has me. And I know that's fine. I get that. But I was at this place where I was really excited about where my ministry was going to 6 months later, falling in love with a woman, marriage falling apart. My sons are 4 and 6. What do I do? Wow. My family was shocked. They didn't know what to make of what I, you know, I'm always the one that had to be different. And I know, I've known that since I was little. I just didn't know to what degree I had my own brain, you know, my own mind. But that's who I was. I was just that, that happened. But it was hard. It was a hard struggle. I remember all, you know, I had to go through the divorce alone because I really didn't have the support. And I don't lay blame. I think of it more as when you're not, until you're faced with a situation, until you know others, that it's really, it's hard to deal with something. And I know it took my mom and it took some of my family members a little bit longer to accept me. You know, I was the different one. I wasn't the one married for 30 years now, 40 years plus. I was the one that divorced, the youngest child to divorce, and what was going to happen. So it was hard. Yeah. It was really hard. I had to go through all that, and I had to go through the back of my mind, my ex-husband telling me that the boys wouldn't love me if they knew I was gay.
Ooh.
So I lived with that. And I had, relationships failed because I kept myself closeted, even though I was out to certain people. It was hard with the church because I left the church for a couple years. And then I worked at a Lutheran church in Liverpool, a wonderful group of people. And the pastor there said, "Trish, you have to get back in the pulpit."
Wow.
So knowingly, because we'll get to my relationship with University United Methodist in a little bit.
Sure.
But I served a local church for another 4 years, but always looking behind my shoulder, wondering who is going to want to bring me up on charges? Who am I going to say the wrong thing? Not charges within the law, but charges within the church, because we've seen so much of that and that. So I didn't come out to my sons until 2016.
Oh, wow.
So that was 8 years from the time I first realized who I am, to being able to be true to my sons was in 2018.
Wow.
Excuse me, 2016.
Wow.
So that was tricky, and I was in a relationship that I thought was forever. So I told the church I could no longer serve, and then I couldn't get a job. So that's what I've been doing. So I've been, substitute teaching for the last, since 2017, and loving it and loving the kids and really being a presence for them.
Yeah.
Not so much because they knew I was an out lesbian, but just because I care. Mm-hmm. And I care for each and every one of them. And I've really enjoyed doing that. And then last year, my home church needed pulpit supply. So they invited me to come home to Oneida first to do pulpit supply.
Wow.
So I did that through February till June until our new pastor arrived.
How did that feel?
It was really great. It was fun because, you know, when you've been away from it for a few years, you kind of get that rejuvenation, you know, of being able to pull out that material and look at it in a different frame. And I was free and clear because I didn't have to worry about looking over my shoulder because mm-hmm. I was pulpit supply.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could just be me. And that was fantastic. And I had told the leadership of the church that on my last Sunday, I was going to tell my story.
Oh, wow.
And explain to them why exactly I wasn't ordained. Because I, you know, came 1 year the first time to be an ordained. And then I went through the ordination process the second time as an elder. And right before I had to submit my paperwork, I said, I can't do this because I'm going to be asked the question and I won't lie. I need to be my authentic self.
Yes.
So it was June of 2021 where I've totally become my authentic self. So that's a lot of years.
Wow.
That's way too many years.
Wow.
Because I feared too many things. And I want to be present for people who have that fear mm-hmm. because it really is. And the community was small. I had a very small community that I could talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And my friendships outside that don't fully understand. Mm-hmm. You know, they still like making jokes and having fun with me and saying things, you know, that I'm like, yeah, no, whatever, as far as that. So I just, you know, I was teaching Spanish last year at the time, and I had students who wanted to do something for Pride Month. And so I said, let's do a bulletin board. And the school that I was working at, we had our first Pride board. The kids have been fantastic.
Wonderful.
They finally came to me and said, Miss Johnson, are you fruity? Who knew that was the word?
Fruity. I haven't heard that in a long time.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm fruity. So it's just kind of taken on a whole totally mm-hmm. different. I mean, I only sub a couple days a week now because I'm now at Sage Upstate. But mm-hmm. I want to keep that connection with the kids because it's a different generation and they look at it. So I just sit there in awe in class and listen to them talk so openly.
Yes.
Never have I ever been, you know, this is open. I haven't really told my story that many times because it's evolved over the years and I've really tried to protect my sons.
Of course, yes.
Really try to protect my sons. And I was protecting myself too at the same time because I love being in the church. I was called at such a young age. I can't imagine not being a part of the church.
So. Yeah. Wow. So tell me, what is your connection with University United Methodist Church?
Well, there was, you know, just Craig French, just truly, he's been a part of my journey since, you know, my commissioning. And I just remember him being present for me when my father passed away in 2005. And I just, when I left the church and I just didn't know what to do, I just knew I needed to talk with somebody. And he came to mind and he said, come on up. And we sat in his office. And it was really interesting because I always looked for a sign from God. And I was working for a financial planner and back at the pond, in the pond there was a heron. And I went up to his office and I told him about how I would see this heron when I really needed God. And he said, look at my coffee table. And there was a book about heron.
Oh, my goodness.
Right?
Oh, my goodness.
Right? Yeah. So you know how that happened. So we just started talking, and he asked me, you know, he just really worked with me. He was just present. Mm. And then he asked if I would be willing to tell my story. Mm. And so that was in 2011 when I was here in the pulpit telling my story.
Wow. Wow. So just in case anyone doesn't know, Reverend Craig French was
yes.
the pastor right before me. And so I don't remember the exact years he was here, but he was here in 2011 and in 2005, it sounds like, right?
I'm not sure where he was in 2005.
Oh, okay.
Was he in Camillus?
But he was with you.
Yes, but he was with me in the process.
That's sweet.
But at that time.
So you told your story in the pulpit.
In the pulpit.
At University United Methodist Church because?
Because they were going through the reconciling congregation process, and he felt that it would be good to hear a story, a firsthand account of someone having to leave the church and leave the ministry
wow.
behind.
How brave of you.
It was. It really was. And then it was great that we had a conversation after the fact with Tiffany, who was at the time the chaplain up at SU, and we had a whole conversation about why this church should become a reconciling church.
Right, right. Reverend Tiffany Steinwert.
Thank you.
is who Trish is mentioning, who was
yes.
the dean of the chapel at Hendricks at Syracuse University for several years. And she also was very active at University United Methodist Church when she was in Syracuse.
Yes.
And so the university church in 2011 was going through this process. They took a whole year mm-hmm. to discern if they wanted to become a reconciling congregation within the United Methodist Church. And so they eventually, after your beautiful story,
maybe that was one part, because I know there were not just me.
I know.
You know that. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I was.
But I was a part
to give
of it.
You props.
No, that's good.
they did studies, you know, like Bible studies and book studies, and heard lectures and heard people's stories, and really, really, really discerned. And then in 2011, what happened, Trish?
Unanimously voted.
Yes.
To be a reconciling congregation.
Yes. And so we just celebrated our 10th anniversary. And so I wasn't here at the time. I got here in July of 2015. But what I really appreciate about this discerning process is that the congregation was not just talking the talk. When people walked in who were from whatever walk of life, the congregation was ready to walk the talk. They
yes.
are very welcoming, very open. And it isn't like we put rainbow banners up and said, come on in. And then when folks got here, they were harmed by the church. What I have found in my 7 years here is that folks come in and feel like they've come home.
And that, which is wonderful, because I have friends who want to come back to the church but don't feel welcome. And that's just really something that hurts my heart. It really hurts my heart. And presently, I'm along with preaching at Oneida First every other week, I am also at Park Hamilton the other weeks, and they are a reconciling congregation now as well.
Oh, wow.
So I get to be a part
That's exciting.
Of that. And so I've been encouraging the younger people mm-hmm. that I know to
yeah.
come. And I had one student say to me after worship, she had never felt so welcomed and knew that God loved her as much as after that service. So I just think that's a wonderful thing
yes.
to be able to be a part of.
Right.
Yes.
The church is made by humans.
Yes.
And we all know we're flawed. And when we can get beyond the organization of religion, we can hopefully recognize that God loves all of us, no matter what.
Exactly.
And that's a message that unfortunately is not heard in all places. And so it breaks my heart that people have been harmed by the church. And it's actually brave to even come into a church even a welcoming church, even a reconciling welcoming church, if you've been harmed in another church. So I think that people are really brave. So the reason we have reconciling churches in the United Methodist Church is because our current doctrine in the Book of Discipline has some language that is exclusive to our siblings in the LGBTQ community. And some of us, all of the reconciling churches who have gone through this process voted and now welcome LGBTQ folks are fighting hard to change that language so that people like Trish, who are obviously called to the ministry, are able to live out their call by God in a church setting and be able to continue to show how much God loves everyone no matter what. So thank you so much for sharing all that. And I'm so glad that you were brave enough, first of all, to hang out with University Church for a bit, but also tell your story, because it is those firsthand stories is what changes hearts.
Well, it is true that University United Methodist was a part of my journey and a part of my healing, because it wasn't only speaking from the pulpit that I was here. I was also present in the pew. And that is necessary for all of us to be able to have that time. I've always looked at my ministry as being the type for, I want to be the person for people that are squirming in the pew. I want to be that safe place where people know that they can be, they're a whole person. And so I had the opportunity to be that squirmer in the pew for a while too. And I am hopeful, and I am grateful that I can still share my message.
Yes.
On Sundays, but also be a part of Sage Upstate, where the hunger has changed,
mm-hmm.
but now it's working with older adults in order to help them to be able to live and feel and be a part of a community that is filled with love.
Right, right. So I remember in your story when you graduated seminary at Drew University, that you were already at that point thinking about older adults.
Yes.
Yes. So this isn't like anything's changed.
Right.
And I also believe that everyone has a ministry, whether they do that out of a church building or somewhere else. You know, we all are ministers and all doing ministry.
Exactly.
So I love it. So now you've found a new place to do your ministry.
Exactly. And I am so excited about it. I've only been at Sage Upstate since November. And there are just so many possibilities and opportunities. But the main thing is for people to know that we are present.
Yes.
And that there's so much available that we can help the older LGBTQ.
Yes.
Community. And that is from people who are fully out to people who are questioning to people who are afraid and know that confidentiality is a part of any conversation that we have.
Right. So I have something that I'm thinking that I wanted to speak, but then I'd love for you to tell me about what are some of the needs of I'm saying older. I don't know if that's the right terminology for Sage, but the older LGBTQ community, what are some of their needs and what are some ways in which the reason Trish and I are even sitting in this interior room, it's not the boiler room, even though you all heard the boiler a few minutes ago. I did not take Trish into the boiler room at the church, but we are in an interior room, so the sound is good. She got to see our clutter. Sorry, Trish. But the reason we're speaking is because she reached out to me and said, I bet there's some ways in which University Church and Upstate Sage can work together. So what I'd like to say before I forget is that there is an older, I mean, above 60-year-old African-American woman who identifies as lesbian, who was a part of CNY HIV AIDS Network. It's a networking community. They do a bunch of stuff. And so when she moved to Syracuse, she said, okay, well, where are we meeting? And they said, oh, at University Church. And she's like, wait a minute, what? What do you mean we're going to a church to meet? And they're like, oh yeah, we always meet at University United Methodist Church. No worries. And she said that it was, even though it wasn't a church event, it was a network event. It was very emotional for her to even walk into the church. And when she sat down for the meeting, she couldn't help but weep. knowing that this faith community accepted and loved her.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And we didn't have to do a thing except for be open to her and this meeting and loving and supporting these people by just offering a space. So,
exactly.
So tell me, what are some of the needs that you are finding at Sage Upstate for your community?
Well, the needs are really community.
Mm, interesting.
I think that because of the isolation, especially now at the time of COVID, so many people are home. And not everyone enjoys Zoom meetings. But I really, when I look back at the pictures and all the smiles and the laughter, I think it's really just being together.
Yes.
So events such as that, and that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to think of mm-hmm. different events for us to have as we are able to reopen. Again, the potlucks, just being able to share a meal with someone. We know how wonderful it is not to sit in front of your television by yourself.
Right.
It's really so nice to come together and do that. Just needs as far as people joining us.
Yes.
We will have the Gay 5K again in June. That is our hope. That is the plan.
Is that a fundraiser or is it a community building or both?
I'm not sure. We'll have to get Kim Dillon here at some point.
Okay.
I'm still learning a lot. But what I really look at is we want providers to understand our community.
Right.
We are willing to come in and talk to different businesses and organizations about who we are. We can, you know, we want to help older LGBTQ get the services that they should have.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually me helping you do it
mm-hmm.
as far as not just giving you something. I will, you know, look at your needs and help you mm-hmm. with that. The working with the Onondaga County Office of Aging is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
We have wonderful meetings and I'm learning so much. And we're also working with Vera House with elder abuse.
Oh, wow.
So I just really want to put that out there too as something that is a concern or something that someone is living with, to please reach out to either Vera House or to me to see how, you know, we can be helpful. It's just so much, but yes, we are. I can't, you know, think of like needs,
yeah.
but we do always take donations.
And oh, of course.
Of course we take donations. And, you know, you can, you know, contribute on a monthly or annually. Excuse me. We have our website is sageupstate.org. You can see what's going on. One of the great programs that we have is Sage Vets, which is working with veterans. And it's a model that even Sage USA in New York City works alongside
wow.
with us. So
great.
What a beautiful thing to have right
yes.
here in Syracuse.
And I bet that there's a lot of community needed by those friends as well.
Exactly.
That's a whole nother layer.
There are just so many layers. I am just learning every layer, and I'll come back again after, you know, for my annual visit.
All right.
And I'll be able to tell you so much more of as far as our needs. But I just really want people to know that Sage is a safe place. We have computers, we have couches, we have a library filled with books of all different things. So you can come in and visit us on Wednesdays and Thursdays in the afternoon right now. That will build up. And just look to see what other things that we have mm-hmm. going. But just know that you can call us.
Great.
Or you can email me or however.
What's your email?
T. Johnson. As in Trish Johnson, the T for Trish, at sageupstate.org.
Great. Wonderful. Now, you called me to see if we could, you know, as a partnership.
Because I see that flag, and then, you know, and I don't know all the things that University United Methodist Church is doing, and then you mentioned that at the beginning, and I think that is so exciting, and I want to help get that word out, too. Because if I'm a member of the community and I don't know all the things that are going on, I want to make sure that that happens. So that's a connection that I hope to have, that we have together. But also, I was talking to a wonderful member of our community who just needed help moving from one apartment next door to the other apartment. And Kim and I are a staff of two. We do have a wonderful board of directors. But I was thinking, oh, wouldn't it be great if we had some younger people or able-bodied people who could just help move? You know, maybe I can call and see if there is that possibility. Or any other. I I love visioning. That's one of the mm-hmm. things that I truly love doing, where I, you know, sometimes I think I see things that can happen, and then 2 years later they happen to someone else, and I really want to be able to hit that spot sometime as far as making things happen. But I just, knowing our location to each other,
yes.
I just think that there's an opportunity for a shared ministry that has yet to be.
Yes,
and
agreed.
This is, we've met each other. Mm-hmm. We've had our conversations a couple of times.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, the possibilities are there.
I agree. One of the things that I mentioned to Trish is that there's been one or two folks who are LGBTQ and are looking for kind of a small group setting where they can just talk with other people who are LGBTQ. And this person's actually in their 20s. And I'm just thinking how beautiful, like, you have seen the difference because of the students that you spend time with, of how LGBTQ folks who are younger don't see, they talk more openly. And I think it'd be beautiful to kind of have an intergenerational LGBTQ small group get together and kind of just be like,
yeah, we're hoping to do that as well. I guess there was such a thing pre-COVID, and it was at the table discussion. And I'm hoping that too, because I, you know, have a few of my teenagers from the school where I
right.
taught that I want to be a part of this, because I want them to understand and see the difference.
Yes.
You know, there's appreciation on both sides.
Agreed.
You know, just to have, even, you know, when I think of the word queer, mm-hmm. you know, that was a word that is used a lot now. But originally the word queer was not always taken in a positive note. So when the young people are saying, yeah, I'm queer, an older person may hit them differently.
Right.
And just understanding that, not to delineate it or get rid of it or whatever, but to just to appreciate mm-hmm. the changes and what people went through.
Mm-hmm.
I love, podcasts are fantastic. There's so much that's available, but I really, on that, Making Gay History, I don't know if I think that's good for anyone to listen to, just mm-hmm. to really understand how life was different in 85 than it is in 2022.
Oh, absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely.
But yes, so I hope that, and we hope to tell stories.
Yes.
Stories are a part of something that we're working on, so that people, I just find that as a minister, I just, the whole being able to have someone tell their story mm-hmm. while they're alive is beautiful. Because we learn so much beauty in a person's life upon their death, that I just have this desire to be able to
yes.
ask people to be brave enough,
mm-hmm.
regardless of their, who they are.
Right.
To be able to share their story, because, wow, what we learn.
Absolutely.
Wow, what we learn.
We learn a lot.
Yes, we do. So I would love to have that intergenerational yeah. Event take place.
Yeah. I'm sure there's other ways we can connect as well, but
yes.
that was the first thing on my mind. So wonderful. Is there anything else that you would like to share about? I'm going to start with SAGE. Is there anything else? Or do you think we got it all?
I think we did a really good okay. job. I just really want people to know that they, you know, wherever they are in their journey, especially if they're at the beginning stages of coming out and they're not sure mm-hmm. that we are a safe place that they can come and talk.
Mm-hmm.
We are a community of a support community. But I do want to do a little shout out to
yes.
our walking group, who I forgot about, but oh. we do actually have a walking group as well, which I can't believe I forgot about, because I typically join them.
Mm.
But there are all different ways just to be in community. But I just really want, knowing where I was back when I was 41 mm-hmm. and coming out, and not knowing what to do, I want people to know that there's a place for them.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you.
And you're welcome.
That sounds like your ministry.
Exactly. I think so, too. I was asked that the other day, if I had a choice. And I was quick and said, SAGE is where I think this is the place at this time.
I love it.
Yes.
That's wonderful. So glad you found a some happiness, you know, in that, in SAGE, but also in being okay with being authentic in who you are.
And yeah, and I can be who I am. I know. This is like the most beautiful thing. And I will tell you, you know, I said that comment earlier about my ex-husband telling me if my sons knew that they wouldn't want to have anything to do with me, and they are two of the most beautiful young men, loving, just, see, this is where I get, you know, emotional. And my family, my mother, it was so hard on her, and she is so wonderfully supportive, and I just, my whole family. So I'm so appreciative that I've been able to get through those hardships and be at the place that I'm at now.
Yes.
Yes.
I was going to ask you about your sons, but I didn't want to pry. No doubt that they're lovely and wonderful.
They are wonderful young men.
Great. So is there anything else you'd like to share, anything in any other way?
I think I am good at this time.
Wonderful.
If there is, I'll have to come back.
I agree. I agree. Thank you so much for joining our podcast, Podcast 3, Trish Johnson. And I wanted to share that we talked a lot about LGBTQ folks today, but University United Methodist Church is open to all people,
yes.
Persons of all ages, all abilities, all socioeconomic status, all different ways in which, whether English is your first language, whether the U.S. is your first home, any of these ways, we are open and welcoming to all. So, again, Trish, thank you so much for your time and for telling your story to us again. And I look forward to future partnerships and future podcasts with you.
And I thank you and University United Methodist for your place and your part in my journey.
Thank you. Yes. That is just a bonus, right?
That's right.
All right. Blessings to you.
Yes, and you as well.